May the words of my lips and the thoughts of all our hearts be always acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. The artist I've chosen for today was a first-class thug, a serious lowlife, short-tempered and violent, a liar, thief, and in fact, murderer. Michelangelo Merisi, known as Caravaggio after the small village where he grew up, turned out, frankly, to be a disaster of a human being. Deeply contemptuous of and libelous about his fellow artists in Rome, though notoriously thin-skinned himself. In and out of prison and of debt, Caravaggio was clearly much more at home with the anarchy of street life than the comforts of an ordered existence, which could have been his for the taking. Instead, he left a trail of human carnage and a string of alienated patrons and embarrassed supporters in his wake. With rumours of several murders associated with him, he's known to have stabbed a man to death in a gang fight in 1606, sparked by losing a bet on a tennis match in which he was playing. He escaped justice by fleeing Rome, but was outlawed by papal authority. From then until his death at the age of 39, Caravaggio was a wanted man who could be executed on the spot by any legitimate authority. Caravaggio was also, of course, a truly brilliant painter. He worked at extraordinary speed. He painted directly onto the canvas without any preliminary sketches, and he possessed a distinctive artistic vision. One of the most obvious features of his art, which perhaps mirrors his life, is its intensely dramatic quality. One of the most obvious examples, familiar perhaps to some of you who know the Supper at Emmaus, is what one could describe almost as his invention of the instantaneous. He conveys a moment's action with extraordinary drama. In that case, the moment comes with the breaking of bread, when the two travelers on the road recognize Jesus. Caravaggio captures, as if in a photograph, the split second of their surprised response, which jolts the table, which we discern through the movement of a bowl of fruit, which he captures just at the moment of being knocked over, a fraction of a second before its contents cascade across the floor. Another is his thoroughgoing emphasis on realism, on working from nature and with live models, mostly drawn from the streets. But here, even in his most sensitive commissions, his uncompromising, you could say gratuitous, insistence on doing things his way led to loss of income and patronage. The most obvious example of this is when he appears to have used the body of a dead prostitute washed up on the banks of the River Tiber as a model for a commissioned painting of the death of the Virgin Mary. The church in question was not overly chuffed. Arrogant, foolish, violent, uncompromising, yet also patently a genius. A genius whose paintings possess a coherent artistic integrity, conveyed with sensitivity and intelligence a broad range of human emotions. Indeed, he even brings alive the Christian scriptures. In this extraordinary combination, Caravaggio brings into sharp relief part of our experience of the perversity of being human. That sometimes we can't even act in our own enlightened self-interest, let alone in the interest of others. But rather, we are held captive, slave to our addictions, impulses, and ingrained habits. A situation captured so effectively by St. Paul. I do not understand my actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? Caravaggio left no account, but we do know that despite his ongoing failures, at various points in his tragic life, he tried to make amends for his actions, to atone for his sins and his destructive behavior. We're not in a position to judge his sincerity in this, except perhaps in this painting you have before you. To our knowledge, Caravaggio painted two self-portraits, one as a sensuous youth in the guise of the young Bacchus, and then this extraordinary portrait, for Caravaggio is the decapitated head of Goliath. To paint yourself in such a fashion, haggard, lifeless, with those hollow, dead eyes, a grotesque to the world. Furthermore, one is one who has been justifiably killed, who, as the arrogant Goliath, has provoked his own death by a young David, who, if you look at the picture, is portrayed not in the throes of victory and revelry, but with a serene, almost pitying glance at his enemy. The salt is truly rubbed into the wound of self-loathing. The painting makes a clear statement. I am a dead man, and I do not deserve to live. And yet, in the act of painting it itself, the painter cries out for redemption, cries out for forgiveness. Few of us have quite the number of demons to wrestle with that Caravaggio invited into his short and destructive life. But for me, no one has expressed their inner darkness, the bitterness of their tears, with greater clarity than this wretched man, Caravaggio. It's not the degree of light or shade in which our souls find their habitat that matters fundamentally. Of that, frankly, we are all poor judges. but rather it is our recognition of the need for forgiveness that should lie at the centre of our individual self-portraits. For as the Gospel makes abundantly clear, Christ did not come for those who considered themselves to be righteous, but rather those who knew themselves to be sinners, even the Caravaggios of this world.